Section 6 of The Testament of Beauty by Robert Bridges. This Legimus recording may be freely used and adapted as long as Legimus and the reader are credited. Book 2. Selfhood. Part 3. The Spartan general Brasidas, the strenuous man who earned historic favour from his conquered foe, once caught a mouse foraging in his mess-basket among the figs, but when it bit him, let it go, praising its show of fight in words that Plutarch judged worth treasuring. And since I read the story at school, unto this hour I have never thought of Brasidas, and cannot hear his name, but that I straightway see a table and an armed man smiling, with hand outstretched above a little mouse that is scampering away. Why should this thing so hold me? And why do I welcome now the tiny beast that hath come running up to me, as if here in my cantos he had spied a crevice, and, counting on my friendship, would make it his home? 'Tis such a picture as must, by beauty of fitness, convince natural feeling with added comfort. The soldier seeth the instinct of selfhood in the mouse to be the same impulse that maketh virtue in him. For Brasidas held that courage ennobleth man, and from unworth redeemeth, and that folk who shrink from venture of battle in self-defence are thereby doomed to slavery and extinction. And so this mouse, albeit its little teeth had done him a petty hurt, deserved liberty for its courage, and found grace in man. I had disliked Brasidas if he had killed the mouse. Needless taking of life putteth reason to shame, and men so startle at bloodshed that all homicide may to a purist seem mortal pollution of soul. A mystical horror of it may rule in him so strong that rather than be slayer he would himself be slain. But fatherhood dispenseth with this vain taboo. The duty of mightiness is to protect the weak. And since slackness in duty is unto noble minds a greater shame and blame than any chance offence ensuing on right conduct, this hath my assent, that where there is any savagery, there will be war. The warrior therefore needeth no apology. Children, for all their innocency and gentleness, in their unreasoned selfhood, think no scorn of war, but practice mimicry of it in their merry games, like puppies that would learn their fighting tricks betimes. And a duke's well-bred cubs win romantic escape from their palatial mansion, hiding in the woods, where they may scream and weave their raw wigwams, and don the feathery tinsel and war-paint of the Cherokees. My little chorister, who never missed a note, I marked him how, when prayers were ended, he would take his Bible, and in his corner ensconced, would sit and read with unassumed devotion. What was it fetched him? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, was it? The parables, the poetry and passion of Christ? Nay, 'twas the bloody books of Jewish war, the story of their judges and kings, lured by those braggart annals, while he conned the page, the parson's mild discourse passed o'er his head unheard. For Coverdale, in his grand English, truly built a temple, fair as that Ionic fane, wherein, neath his nine-columned portico of all history, Herodotus sitteth, statued. And, like the Jew, the naive Greek chronicler discovereth God's purpose, guiding his chosen race to terrestrial glory. Nor hath any other nation any better argument, whether it be forged or filched, invented or stolen, and their historians all as our children in this, and eagerly from battlefield to battlefield jaunt on their prancing pens after their man of war, who carveth the earth into new kingdoms, as a cake is sliced for grabbing schoolboys at a tea-party, and in their exultation of dread and daring do, prowess is magnified and cruelty condoned, whence smaller nations, as the Portuguese, require to multiply tenfold the tale of combatants ere they deem any event worthy of their pictured pride. Parisian vanity reposeth thus to-day on Bonaparte's fame, for Alexander and he are kings of kings and lords of lords, the conquerors of conquerors all, dwarfing rude rivals whensoe'er, Alaric, Tamerlane, Attila, and Zingis Khan, once names of terror and furious bombast, foremost men humbled, as were the 70 kings, who with their thumbs and their great toes cut off, fingered the crumbs beneath the Donabezek's table, until Jew Simeon came and did the same by him, to my chorister's joy. And since all earthly empire hath taken origin from bloody invasion, man for himself would fashion his sanction and exemplar in the kingdom of heaven. Thus hundred-handed giants, swarming from chaos to exalt the glory of Zeus, barricaded his throne, uprooting mountains in titanic rebellion. So hath the church uttered like false monies for Christ, with Godhead's image stamped, and passed it on the folk who, shadowed in the murk of vulgar vainglories, will prick their ears to hear how there was war in heaven, and Michael and his angels, like knights of romance, fought with the dragon, though all might hath naught to gain, and by sovereign oppression exalteth only his foe in tragic sympathy, as with Milton's great devil, against infinite odds confronting undismayed inevitable ruin, or old Methuselah, who, when the flood rose higher, swam from peak to peak, till, with the last wild beasts tamed in their fear, he sat watching the whelm of water on topmost Everest, as that too was submerged, while in his crowded ark Noah rode safely by, and sailors, caught by storm on the wide Indian Ocean at shift of the monsoon, have seen in the dark night a giant swimmer's head that on the sequent billows trailing silvery hair at every lightning flash reappeareth in place, outriding the tempest, as a weather-bound bark anchored in open roadstead lifteth at the seas. And poetry, in her task of adorning spirit, trustful also and faithful to the instincts of man, honoureth ever the steeds above the charioteer. She once would favour selfhood, but 'tis now the foal, and learning sapphic languor in the labour of love, the muse hath doffed her armour for a silken robe. Yet in her swooning luxury she hath never matched nor disthroned bearded Homer's great epic of war, although that siege of Troy was in the beginning wrath and concupiscence, and in the end thereof tragedy so tearful that no mind can approve, nor any gentle heart take comfort in the event. But these, and all old tales of far-off things, bygones of long ago, whereof memory still holdeth shape, time and the muse have purged of their unhappiness. With their bright broken beauty they pervade the abyss, peopling the solitude with gorgeous presences, as those bare lofty columns, time-whitened relics of Atlantean adoration, upstanding lone in Baalbek or Palmyra, proudly affront the waste, and with rich thought atone the melancholy of doom. Yet, since of all, whatever hath once been, evil or good, though we can think not of it and remember it not, nothing can wholly perish. So there is no birthright so noble, or stock so clean, but it transmitteth dregs, contamination at core of old brutality, inchoate lobes, dumb shapes of ancient terror abide. Though fading still in the oceanic deeps of mind, their eyeless sorrows haunt the unfathomed density, dulling the crystal lens of prophetic vision, crippling the nerve that ministereth to trembling strength, distorting the features of our nobility. And we, living at prime, what is it now to us how our forefathers dreamed, suffered, struggled, or wrought? How through the obliterated eons of man's ordeal unnumbered personalities separately endured? Think not to explore, estimate, and accumulate those infinite dark happenings into a single view that might affect feeling with true judgment of thought. Imagination, that would set science that task, is as the astronomer who, with peduncled eyes, screwed here or there at some minutest angle space of the wide heavens, thinketh by piecemeal reckoning to picture and comprehend the illimitable world's thronging eternity. His highest fantasy is like an athlete's dream that he hath leapt off the globe, when all his waking power is to jump up and fall the height of his own head, all that the best can do. Were it not then well to inquire of reason, ere we admit her condemnation of war, seeing it so firmly entrenched in the immemorial practice and good favour of man, whence hath she fetched her high authority, her right of spiritual judgment? Whence then cometh wisdom? But I was angered with myself to have said this thing, seeing that my thought had wandered. For reason replied, "This question is wrongly asked. Who is it that putteth this question into my mouth and biddeth me answer him? I, who have never doubted of my authority, who am the consciousness of things judging themselves, have I not learned that selfhood is fundamental and universal in all individual being? And that through motherhood it came in animals to altruistic feeling, and thence after in men rose to spiritual affection? What then am I in my conscience of self, but very consciousness of spiritual affection upgrown to life in me? Truly inscrutable and dark is the wisdom of God, but no man cometh unto wisdom but by me." Then was I shamed, but still my thought went harking back on its old trail, whence reason learned its troublous task to comprehend aright and wisely harmonize the speechless intuitions of the inconscient mind, which, though a naked babe, as men best pictured Christ, is yet in some sort nearer to the omniscient than man's unperfect reason, balked as that must be by the self-puzzledom of introspection and doubt. That dark mind, with its potency, is the stuff of life, nature's immutable provision. In some, may be, stagnant and poor, in some active and rich, in each a given unique quantum of personality, alone of so much, as 'tis writ, to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. A treasure that can be to good fortune assured by reason, its determinant and inexplicable coefficient, that varieth also in power and worth. For I think not of reason as men thought of Adam, created full-grown, perfect in the image of God, but as a helpless nursling of animal mind, as a boy with his mother, unto whom he oweth more than he ever kenneth or stayeth to think, language, knowledge, grace, love, and those ideal aims whereby his manly intelligence cometh to walk alone. But how, in this independence and pride, I ask, how can this younger born stand off so far apart, clear of all else, that by the mere conscience of things he can be judge of all, and of himself to boot? For that I find him oftentimes servant and drudge, as 'tis seen in the true hermeneutic of art, whereof all excellence upspringeth of itself, like a rare fruit upon some gifted stock, ripening on its arch personality of inborn faculty, without which gift creative reason is barren, although it will collaborate actively and eagerly with various governance, which appeareth in some as happy selection and delighted approval of spiritual nativities that teem i' the mind, surging to escape like to wild bubbles in a pot when the red fire beneath bristleth and tortureth the water to airy ebullience, or in another as toilsome evolution of larval germs which yet transform while confidently it laboureth thereat slowly as a modeller in clay. How in its naked self reason were powerless showeth when philosophers will treat of art, the which they are full ready to do, having good intuition that their master key may lie therein. But since they must lack vision of art, for elsewise they had been artists, not philosophers, they missed the way, and even the Greeks themselves, supreme in making as in thinking, never of their own art found the true hermeneutic. and the first insight of the twin-gifted Plato was to Aristotle a crude offence. For Plato said that earthly things, whether material objects or abstract notions, were shadows of ideas laid up in God's house, a dainty dish for the sophistic banqueters. And yet this delicate doctrine, that held no shield to Zeno's lancing logic, took not hurt at heart from any mortal assault, but liveth in the schools with flourished head, serene, high, and invulnerable. Because the absurdity of indefinable forms is less than the denial of existence to thought. And truly, if all existence is expression of mind, ideas must themselves be true existences, than whatever else, and in such thought their nearest name. End of section 6.